This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
5 minutes past the hour here in our nation's capital. It's a Tuesday afternoon edition of the Hoffman Show right here on the Team 980. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey apps, the Youngest in Charge Mobile, and Al Willingham taking you up to 6:30. Before we dish things over to our coverage of Hoyas basketball, right now we go out to the guest hotline. This is where we find our pal Mitch Tischler here on a Tischler Tuesday right here on the Hoffman Show. He is one half of the Beltway Football Pod. Make sure you give Mitch a follow on the X app at Mitch_Tischler. That is T-I-S-C-H-L-E-R. Mitch, what's going on, my brother?
What's a good word, my friend? You're not Craig Hoffman.
I am not Craig Hoffman, but I am with you on a Tischler Tuesday. We got to keep the tradition going. I actually love listening to your hits with our pal Craig Hoffman. Big fella, I got to start with the stadium news that we heard earlier today. As someone that has grown up around this area, been a lifelong fan, for your money, where do you think this new Commander Stadium ultimately ends up?
Listen, I want the stadium back at RFK. I believe that it should be back at RFK. Today was very exciting as a first step towards making that thing happen, or the next step in terms of making that thing happen. I think there's two big questions that have to be asked right now. First of all, it has to pass, you know, the rest of the way, and the district has to get control of it. Secondly, Maryland has $400 million on the table ready for Josh Harris and company to spend on building a new stadium, to spend on the infrastructure around a new stadium. If RFK does happen and gets back into the city's hands, either A, do they have that money for Josh Harris, or B, is he willing to build a privately funded stadium? Because that's a pretty big second piece to this whole conversation. They've backed themselves up into a corner where they've made it very clear to Commanders fans and the public that they want that RFK site. I think that's a fantastic situation. I love that they're holding out and hoping that they can make RFK happen. But just because it gets back, just because the land gets back into the city's hands, isn't a guarantee that there's going to be a new football stadium there, because $400 million is a lot of money. And for a guy who just spent, you know, better part of $7 billion on a football team, you know, he's probably going to want some of that public money to help out the funding. So I want it to be at RFK. In my heart of hearts, I believe in Josh Harris. I believe in the city that they're going to be able to find a way to get it done. But there's still some pretty big hurdles that have to get figured out before we get to that point.
You're right, Mitch. And you hit on the key thing here. He's got to have the opportunity to put money down for a new stadium. D.C. is not a sure thing right now based off of what happened earlier today. As you mentioned, they still got to get this thing on the Senate floor, and then that becomes a whole another different set of worms. But this is the interesting thing to me, and I'm just now becoming privy to this information. The Josh Harris ownership group, and I know the dealings with the Sixers are different in terms of who exactly is involved, but they're publicly funding, or excuse me, they're paying for the Sixers' new $1.3 billion stadium project in its entirety without any public funding. How much do you think that impacts this?
I don't believe that should impact that much at all. They're two separate companies, two separate entities, but I do think you have to see the frustration that has been caused in Philadelphia, the consternation that's been caused in Philadelphia over Josh Harris trying to, you know, move that 76ers stadium. Essentially, the Sixers, the Flyers, the Phillies, and the Eagles all play in one stadium complex, one area in South Philadelphia. And I, for one, think it's pretty cool that all the teams in the city play in that same area. Fans know hey, when I want to go see a game, you know, same parking lot, same restaurant, same, activation, same concert venues, all that stuff, all in one place. You know exactly where you're going. He's wanting to move it from there to downtown Philadelphia, to the Chinatown area. And I know just from, we were just in Philadelphia, a week ago, for that Eagles game. A lot of folks aren't particularly pleased with Josh Harris right now up in Philadelphia. And certainly part of it is owning the Commanders and, you know, supporting another team city. We know how crazy Philly fans are about there. But the other part of it is moving that stadium. And you hope that he learned something big from those doings and is able to apply those learnings to here in Washington as he figures out the new spot for the Commanders.
Well, Mitch, I don't have to be the sharpest tool in the shed to put two things together here. The Sixers are footing the entirety of that bill because the taxpayers would have looked at them sideways. If you said, wait, you're moving it out of the place we want it and we got to pay for it. So I think that kind of answers that question a little bit. It'll be interesting to see how him and his 21 limited partners foot this bill. I happen to lean Maryland as well because I think that jurisdiction is in a better position to publicly fund something if that's going to be the case compared to D.C. Mitch, enough of the stadium talk, though. It drives me insane. I know it's something people care about. I know it's something people care about, but I want to move on to the football portion of things. Yesterday, Dan Quinn took the podium and opened up the presser by saying Jaden Daniels is not hurt now. Do you buy what the head coach is selling?
I mean, I think you have to. I guess we've seen the last couple weeks what that offense has looked like and what Jaden's looked like trying to throw the football, and I think we can all agree that he probably wasn't 100% healthy, and I think part of the offensive struggles have been a combination of Jaden not being healthy, thus Cliff Kingsbury trying to protect him a little bit and not calling as dynamic of an offense where maybe Jaden would be put in these situations where where he could get hurt. But, you know, these are two very winnable football games. And, I'm not ready to say that the offense is a problem or that it needs to be fixed or that Cliff needs to continue to evolve or that Jaden isn't, that guy. But we've seen Dallas give up 30-plus points in four of their last five games and, look like a defense that can easily be beat. You know, I kind of look at these Cowboys and, offensively, this boils it down pretty basically, but offensively, don't let CeeDee Lamb beat you deep. Yeah. And defensively, don't let Micah Parsons wreck the game. Yeah. And if you're able to do those two things, it's hard for me to think that Washington's not going to come out of Sunday with a victory.
I agree 100% with you. And then watching them last night, I mean, they tried to put up a fight with Houston in that first half, but then the Texans kind of ran away with that thing in the third quarter. But you're right. I mean, Sunday is a game – perfect for an offense that's struggling and the ability to get back on schedule, so to speak. But when you look big picture, Mitch, at some of the issues Washington is having offensively, how much do you chalk it up to playing two really good defenses in Philly and Pittsburgh versus this group just struggling right now?
I mean, they did have a double-digit lead on Pittsburgh in the second half and put up 27 points on them. Listen, you can go back to the Baltimore game and look at it. No Brian Robinson. Same thing with the Pittsburgh game. Philly was on a short week against a beat up rookie QB. I think that you can point to each loss, and there are legitimate reasons behind the offense not being the juggernaut that it was earlier in the season. And I think you can look pretty much directly at that Carolina game.
Yeah.
They put up 40 points after that. The offense hasn't looked as crisp and as clean, and obviously that Carolina game is when, Jaden hurt that rib. So I think that, as much as you have to be frustrated with some of the things that are happening offensively, you have to appreciate that the defense has stepped up
and
played very well over the last couple of weeks. And yes, they gave up four touchdowns to Pittsburgh. Yes, they gave up 26 points to Philly. But even in those games, I think you can point to some specific things that front seven or that secondary did very well. And if you hope the offense is going to come back around to where it was and the defense continues to play at this level, you have to be very confident about what this team can do come playoff time.
Mitch, what you just did, my friend, is an early nominee for segue of the week, because I was going to ask you about the defense next. As crazy as we are feeling right now about what the offense has done over the past two games, defensively, I'm super impressed. They held Philadelphia to 3 points in the first half. If I would have told you that going in to Thursday's contest, you'd say that's a part of the recipe for a victory. When you look at the defense in particular, what to you has been the most impressive thing about that group over the last two games here?
Not only the last two games, but just as the season has progressed.
Yes.
It's been the plan and the execution of what Joe Witt Jr. wants to do with this defense. Because you can look back even earlier in the season when they did give up a lot of points, players were in position to get interceptions, to pick off balls, to, you know, get PBUs, whatever, you know, stat you want to use. Mm-hmm. And I just think that you could recognize that the guys were kind of where they're supposed to be. They just maybe don't have quite the talent level to execute and create turnovers the way that this defensive staff wants you to. But to me, the most encouraging thing has just been the defensive plan. You know, we've seen week after week they come out and you think that they're going to get, you know, run points are going to be run up on them. But, you know, outside of really Baltimore and Cincinnati and week one against Tampa, which I'm kind of just willing to gloss over as it being, you know, the first week, this defense hasn't given up big time points to anybody. And particularly against Philadelphia, 3 points in the first half is impressive. You know, haters will say they missed two field goals and they had a long drive. At the end of the day, the points are what they are on the scoreboard. And they did a really good job all game of keeping Saquon Barkley in check until, you know, the final, whatever it was, 8 minutes when they had two 30-yard touchdown runs in 30 seconds, you know, kind of back-to-back almost. So I've been super impressed with kind of the plan as a general, you know, kind of big picture thing. And then as you zero in on the safety duo of Jeremy Chinn and Quan Martin, I've been very impressed by the two of them. Chinn has made a ton of big, big plays. He's an awesome, he's an awesome factor in the run game. And Quan Martin has been quietly very solid on the back end. And I love plays like last week against Philly when Dallas Goedert's running down the field and Quan, you know, punches it out from behind and they get, you know, they put the ball, they force a fumble. They don't necessarily recover it,
right. But
they force the fumble. The defense has been awesome and impressive and fun to watch. And quite frankly, you know, I think all of us include the fan base, the media around the team, all of your analytics people, everyone who said that this defense was going to stink and hand up. I was one of them that I was very concerned about. That hasn't been the case.
You're right. They have been a pleasant surprise, especially here over the last 6 or 7 weeks. We've seen that group turn a corner. The one theme, I guess, Mitch, that I have noticed with the Commanders' offense that has been kind of troubling is when they go up against stout running defenses or stout defenses in general, Mitch, it feels like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it feels like to me the patience of Cliff Kingsbury with the run game gets a little bit more thin. I go back to Thursday night. The final box score lists Brian Robinson as averaging 4 yards a pop. Obviously, the 18-yard run helps the average. But does it feel like in the Baltimore game, the Pittsburgh game, the tail end of the Chicago game where he was hurt, and then against Philadelphia on Thursday, that there kind of is a lack of patience with the running game? I feel like if you're going to really be a team committed to running it, Mitch, you can't let a no gain or a 1 yard gain discourage you from running it. It's about those rushing attempts in the final minutes of the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's certainly something to be concerned about. I mean, you point to Pittsburgh and Baltimore, and those are games without Brian Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been talking about on the Beltway Football Podcast a fair amount that, you know, Brian Robinson is a good running back in the NFL. He's a very good player. No one's trying to take anything away from him. But he's not, you know, prime Adrian Peterson or prime Emmitt Smith or Christian McCaffrey, a guy who there shouldn't be as big of a drop off between when he's running the football and the other running backs on this team are. And yet that's the world that we live in, because you have the two games against Pittsburgh and Baltimore that he didn't play in, where the team ran for, you know, 50 and 60 yards as a whole, whereas they average $1.50 on the ground,
right?
In games that he plays, actually probably $1.60 on the ground. In games that he plays. And that's not all his running. But I do think that Brian Robinson being limited or not playing also has an effect on Jaden Daniels in the run game and teams having to respect the run, you know, between the tackles, which is what Brian Robinson does very well. And when you don't have a threat in between the tackles, teams can line up on the outside with their speed, not let Jaden beat them to the outside. And then also that hurts the passing game as well, because you don't have the threat of Jaden and his legs. You can go with more dime coverages. You can do it with more extra DBs and safeties on the field, because you're not concerned about stuff being run up the middle. So the biggest concern that I've had with this offense is what it's looked like without Brian Robinson. Forget the Jaden Daniels injury.
Right.
It's this offense comes to a real grinding halt when Brian Robinson isn't in there, and that's an issue.
Yes, it is, my friend. Mitch, I'll let you go on this, pal. So I believe it's, what, 6 games left to go? What is the magic number that you think Washington's got to get to make the postseason?
To make the postseason?
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to go probably – they can probably get in at 3-3, I would guess. But let's look at it this way. Mm-hmm. When the Commanders and Eagles play December 22nd, the Commanders have 3 games between now and then. Cowboys, Titans, Saints. I'm not saying they will be, but they should be favored in all 3 of those games. They could easily walk into that December 22nd matchup at 10-4. The Eagles are 8-2. They have 4 games before that Commanders game on December 22nd. At Rams, at Ravens, versus the Panthers, versus the Steelers.
Brutal.
If they go 2-2 in that run, you're looking at both teams being 10-4, both teams vying for the same thing that they were vying for on Thursday when they played. And that's, you know, the Eagles could easily go 1-3 in that group as well and end up sitting there at 9-5, and the Commanders could be 10-4. The point being, the Eagles are up a game and a half in the division, 2 games in the loss column versus the Commanders, but the Eagles have a much, much tougher schedule the rest of the way, and I'm excited about kind of playing each week, because each week is very important. But you look at that end of December game, that right before Christmas game, against the Eagles, that might be an early Christmas present, because that could be a lot of fun at Northwest Stadium.
It's going to be a good old-fashioned slobber knocker, Mitch Tisler. I appreciate you giving us some time, my friend. We'll do it again soon.
Hey, anytime, Linnell. Great talking to you. Love having you on.
Appreciate you, my man. That is Mitch Tisler. Make sure you all check out the Beltway Football Pod wherever you download your podcast. You can check him out on the Monumental Sports Network as well. And make sure you give Mitch a follow at Mitch_Tischler. So Mitch brings up an interesting point here. This Commander's offense has come to a screeching halt without Brian Robinson into the lineup. But over the past two games, this offense, to me, has sputtered. And my level of concern is higher than it should be as we continue to move throughout the final 6 games of the season. What's got to improve for this offense to take a step forward? I think there's a couple of different things here. That's the one frustrating part when we discuss this Washington offense, is I'd be hard-pressed to say it's just one thing that's causing this group to sputter. 301-230-0980 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, I'll give you my level of concern out of 10 for the Commanders offense. Plus, I'll tell you, from my vantage point, the biggest reason the Commanders are struggling right now offensively, if I had to sum it up to one thing. That's next here on the Team 980. Wow. 301-230-0980, the number here on the Hoffman Show. We'll take you up to 6:30 before we dish things over to our coverage of Maryland Terrapins basketball. Not the Hoyas. I'm sorry, Terps. Derek Quinn getting buckets. I'll tell you that. Definitely seems like he is going to be one of the front runners for freshman of the year. I know Cooper Flagg is going to have a lot to say about that, but we just had our guy Mitch Tischler on, one half of the Beltway podcast, as we do each and every Tuesday here on the Hoffman Show. Look, the Commanders' offense, let's just be honest and blunt about what the last 2 weeks have been offensively for Washington. Had been good. And I know you all want to use the whole thing of, well, you scored 27 against Pittsburgh. Let's be real. You were gifted 7 of those points based off of a special teams turnover deep in their own territory. And when I look at the numbers, this is the number one stat to me that tells kind of how Washington is doing offensively. The last two games combined against Pittsburgh and against Philadelphia, the Washington Commanders, I can't even believe this is real. The Washington Commanders are 8 of 26 on third down the last two games. They are 8 of 26 on third down the past two games. That's not going to cut it. It's just not. And as we sit here at 7-4 with a terrible Dallas team limping in here Sunday, this offense is sputtered. It's the reality of it. But when I add context to it, we're 7-4. So I'm trying not to blow a gasket here. But let's be real. Our expectations, at least they should have, our expectations have changed for this group since the start that they've gotten off to. 100%. I don't think anybody could doubt that. But as we sit here looking at the way the offense has performed the last two games, what is your level of concern out of 10 for the offense? And then if you had to finger point one thing, what is the biggest reason for the offensive struggles? I'll start with the first one here. My level of concern out of 10 for the offense is a 6. It's a 6. I'm even willing to go 6.5. I'll go 6.5, 65% concern level. Why am I concerned about the offense? Well, let's just be real here. The last 2 weeks, this group has looked like a shell of themselves offensively. And I don't want to hear anything about drops. Let's just be honest about what happened. They have not looked the same the last 2 weeks. Granted, Pittsburgh is a very talented defense. Best defense in the NFL. If you want to feel better about how Washington looked against Pittsburgh, just go cut on the Ravens and Steelers tape from this Sunday, and you'll see it. Pittsburgh put Lamar in the blender, too. That's what they do. My thing is this. It's not even about my concern level, but there is some concern with me. My major concern is the biggest reasons why they're struggling. There are a couple of different things. I think this offensive line has taken a step back, and they've also played up against better units. But I think the offensive line has taken a step back, specifically on the interior, where they were so great throughout the first 9 weeks. If you listen to me do radio, I've sang the praises of Nick Allegretti, Tyler Biadasz, Sam Cosmi. Those three guys struggled the past 2 weeks. Over the past 4 weeks, Washington has gone up against three of the NFL's top seven scoring defenses: Chicago, Pittsburgh, Philly. The Eagles also rank first in yards allowed per game. Pittsburgh's eighth. So you're going up against the best of the best here. You are. So there is going to be natural regression. But for their third down numbers to shrink and dwindle the way that they have is alarming. For the run game to be stymied as much as it has been is alarming. It is. It just is. Now, against Pittsburgh and Philly, you went up against two defenses that honestly got out of their comfort zone to try and stop you, right? Against Washington, the Steelers blitzed 19 times. 19 times. It's more than the Steelers blitz on average. It was a season high for the game. Rushing 5 was their way of beating Washington. Rushing 5 and then maintaining your rush lane discipline when getting after the quarterback. That was their key against Washington, and it worked. It just is what it is. The Steelers, think about this, right? I'm pretty sure after Lamar's first couple of seasons, Mike Tomlin and the Steelers coaching staff got in the lab and said, "Hey, bro, I'm tired of this. We're not about to keep letting this guy run around and beat us the way he has." So I think the Steelers have concocted the perfect defense to stop mobile quarterbacks. So I kind of give an omission for what happened against Pittsburgh. I just do. But the Philadelphia thing, that's where I'm a little bit more concerned. So Philly is known for disguising their coverages, rotating at the snap of the football, which in turn, right, is going to impact your timing in the passing game. So the Eagles, a lot of the time, and these numbers are via John Keim of ESPN, the Eagles sent an extra defender only four times on Thursday, allowing them to play seven or more in coverage. Naturally, right, taking away the deep shots that Washington has benefited from offensively. As a result, Jaden Daniels had one pass attempt for more than 20 yards against Philly. So it kind of shows you schematically what Philadelphia did, what Pittsburgh did to try and stymie what Washington's done well. And they did a good job at it. But at the bottom line is, I think Jaden Daniels would acknowledge he's got to play better. But this is the confusing thing to me. And Anthony, if you got it ready, Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Washington Commanders, spoke yesterday and had this to say from yesterday's OT folder. Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Washington Commanders, spoke yesterday for the first time this week, and I'll be honest, after hearing him speak yesterday, I'm starting to get annoyed with the whole podium bit. Here is Commanders head coach Dan Quinn yesterday on the reason for Washington's offensive struggles.
Jaden is not injured right now, but we did lose valuable practice time, John, with him and his teammates when he was injured. And that's hard on all the guys. It's a really, really important part of what we do. And we don't have banked reps in years, so we're very much looking forward to getting back onto a full week and regular practice sessions with the guys. So over the last few weeks, we've had to, you know, put that together in small bits. So that's what I think into that space. And as we're heading into this week, we're looking forward to getting a full week of our practice and, you know, work the things that we need to.
Because of that, where do you see that? Is it the rhythm of the pass game? Where do you see that affecting the pass game most?
I would say the rhythm and timing too, John, I think is a big piece of it too. You have to be able to run things full speed. Walkthroughs are good to help where you do a line and where do you target, but you need the practice. You need the full speed reps to really, you know, let it rip and go. And so that's why that's such an important piece of what we do, the Wednesday, the Thursday, the Friday of the week. So we'll look forward to getting into some full weeks for sure, John.
I mean, am I missing something? Am I missing something in this equation? Did Jaden Daniels not have a full week of practice heading into Pittsburgh? Jaden Daniels was not listed on the injury report going into Pittsburgh. So why are we talking about a lack of practice time? Why is that relevant? Am I being Ron Rivera'd a year after? I'm not trying to be, you know, a jackass at all. It's not at all what I'm trying to do. But see, I got to learn, and this is on me as a host. I got to get better with this. Our program director, CK, said this earlier to me today, and I honestly agreed with him. I actually prefer a coach that's going to get up there and lie at the podium. I want a liar. Get me the biggest liar you can find, because I don't want my competitive advantage being taken away from me. I get that. But damn, I mean, somebody's got to know what's going on. Somebody's got to know what's actually going on with his ribs. You cannot sit there and tell me, and I'm getting frustrated, because I sat here and I listened to them tell me he's fine, he's fine, he's fine. I was the guy coming out of Chicago that said, hey, look, or excuse me, coming out of Carolina that said, hey, look, if he's not 100%, sit his ass down. The quarterback position, listen to me closely when I say this. The quarterback position is one that is so dependent upon reps and mechanics, right? And you want to preach good habits. One thing that I've noticed, and I'm sure you all have noticed as a fan base, since the injury has happened to Jaden Daniels, there have been some bad habits that have been developed by the quarterback. One of which, Jaden Daniels is not stepping into his throws. Jaden Daniels is not following through on his throws. You want to know why? Because those ribs are tender. Because he doesn't want to get hit. You watch the Pittsburgh game. You watch the Philadelphia game, especially the miss to Noah Brown. The miss to Noah Brown against Philadelphia is a direct result of his mechanics not being sharp. Why are his mechanics not sharp? Because he's hurt and he's trying to compensate for his rib. So he's putting that torque elsewhere. It's not throwing with the same amount of torque. I go to the Pittsburgh game, the first third down that they had of the game. Alameda Zacchaeus on third and short. Pressure comes in Jaden's face. Instead of standing in there and taking the hit on the chin like a grown-ass man, he fades away, and the ball gets away from him, and it's wide of the target to OZ. Why is he fading away? Well, let's be honest, right? Because I watch just as closely as you all say you do. The fading away thing for Jaden has been a problem all year. It just hasn't hurt him. Patrick Mahomes does it. Lamar does it. Josh Allen does it. If you can lessen the blow that you're going to take, why not lessen the blow that you're going to take? But, dude, if you're going to start missing as a result, I got to get someone else in there that's willing to stand in there and take the shot. You went 3-and-out on your opening possession because your quarterback wouldn't stand in and throw the football. Why? Because he's hurt. Because he's hurt. I don't know, and I'm not trying to be that guy, but you can't look at us and say we're stupid. That's basically what's being told to us, is that we think you all are stupid. Anyone that has watched this young man, if you saw him Sunday against Pittsburgh, if you saw him Thursday against Philly, clearly he is not right. But one thing to Dan Quinn and company's credit, they have been real low-key, real close to the vest in terms of what the actual nature of the injury is. But let's be real here. If there is any sort of, if there's any sort of pain that's causing him to adjust his mechanics because of discomfort, then sit him till he's 100%. Because that's the last thing you want to do is create bad habits. 301-230-0980 is the number. What's your level of concern out of 10 for this Commanders offense? And then in your mind, if you had to finger point to one thing, we know it's a multitude of things, but if you had to put your finger on one thing, it's the biggest reason for the struggles offensively. Let's go to Santoni. What up, Santoni?
What's up, Wish?
What's going on, brother?
Hey, look, straight up and down, level of concern of 10, 10, 10. Shorty hurt.
Yeah?
He hurt. Yeah.
Thank you for saying that, because I feel like people are, I don't know.
I don't know what's going on. I don't know how you don't see it. I'm Fat Tony from Capitol Heights. I'm sitting out here on the back row just watching this stuff every week. He hurt, and we about to wreck him. He already skinny. Now I'm questioning Quinn and all of them, because I don't even know how he out there. I'm confused. I'm seriously confused.
Open the door, close the door. I am confused. I feel you, brother.
Seriously. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you, Santoni. 301-230-0980. Let's go to Dontel. Wants to tap in. What is your level of concern for the offense? And then the biggest reason, if you had to point to one thing that the offense is struggling, or why the offense is struggling.
Youngness, what's going on, my man?
What's going on, brother, man? How are you?
Hey, listen, man, I got two. My level of concern is off the charts, dude. That ain't even high enough. So, but I got two things I want to say to you and see if you agree on it. Because I remember last week, I think it was Chris, we was talking about how do we bash Jaden when he doesn't have a good game or when we lose, just like we give him all the props. When we win, he's got to take it as a quarterback. Are we allowed to bash him? Yes, we are allowed to bash him. But here's my thing. When are we going to bash Adam Peters? Because this is where I think he dropped the ball. Our defense is getting better every single week. Not great, but getting better. And what he failed to do was to go get that man another receiver so Terry McLaurin won't have weeks where he's got two catches and one catches like he did in back-to-back weeks. This is a big problem. You give him another weapon that's viable. We get off the we stay on the field on third downs.
I hear you.
We need that other receiver, Well, we're not going anywhere. The second thing I wanted to say to you real quick was B-Rob. Everybody praises B-Rob, but on third down and a half a yard, he's got to learn game situations where we don't need five. Because there was a time where he could have plowed his way. It wasn't a lot there, but he could have plowed his way and got the first down. But he tried to step off and end up losing three. You can't do that. My level of concern is off the charts, youngest.
I hear you, brother. But here's my thing. Let me ask you this one real quick before we hit the break. Do you believe that they're being truthful about his injury?
No, he is hurt. I've been saying that the entire time. If he's not hurt, this is what confuses me. When they said, I was listening to Sheehan today, and he says there's a difference between hurt and pain. What the hell was the difference?
Well, no. There's a difference between being hurt and injured. Hurt means you could play through it. Injured means you can't play. He's hurt. I don't think he's injured.
He's taking a hit. He's taking a hit on his MVP thing because he's out there playing when he shouldn't be playing.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm saying, man, we need to play the other guy and let him get healthy, man.
I agree.
If we got too much invested in him.
I agree, Dontell. Appreciate the call. 301-230-0980 is the number. We'll continue your calls. Plus, we'll look at whether or not Sunday is a must-win game for the Washington Commanders. Plus, Austin Eckler may have provided us with some major insight on what exactly is wrong with quarterback Jaden Daniels. Let's hear from Austin Eckler next. 301-230-0980, the number here on the Hoffman Show, right here on the Team 980. Youngest in charge, Will Whitlinell Willingham, sitting in for Craig Hoffman. We'll take you to 6:30 before we hand things over to our coverage of Maryland Terrapins basketball. Speaking of the Maryland Terrapins, Mike Loxley, quote from his press conference earlier today, quote, "We are nowhere near where we want to be as a program." Let's be honest. He's right. He is right. Maryland football in a place... Maryland football in a place it should not be. Let me just leave it at that. Right now, though, I want to talk a little bit about the Burgundy and Gold football program. Washington 7-4, heading into a big-time showdown Sunday at home against the Dallas Cowboys, but they're coming into Sunday's game hitting a little bit of a rough patch offensively. What is your level of concern after watching the Commanders' offense sputter over the past two games? And then, two, what's the biggest reason for the offensive struggles, if you had to point to just one thing? Let's go to my guy, Fast Eddie. What's going on, Eddie?
Hey, man. Thanks for taking my call.
For sure, man. Good to hear from you, brother, man.
Yeah, it's been a little while, man. You know, working. Got to make that money.
I dig it.
America. But, you know, I'm about at an 8, and the reason being is if I was a little higher, but we played some real tough defenses. But, man, if it's one thing, it's that offensive line. I call in the station for years, man. When are we going to put real draft capital into that offensive line and protect this man? And you'd hit the nail on the head. They've regressed, and they show who they really are. That left tackle ain't good enough. And when you go against the best of the best, we ain't going to win. So we can limp into the playoffs all we want, but if we go against one of these defenses, what's going to happen? So this man's too skinny. He's too small to take these hits. I don't know what was going on that Eagles game with some of those RPOs, and he's running the ball. He was taking so many hits. I thought he was going to be out for the season at one more time on those sore ribs. So I would love to see Mariota play these bums next couple bum games and let this man get to the bye and get right, man. But I'm going to shut up and listen to you, my friend. But thank you.
Appreciate you, Fast Eddie. 301-230-0980. I'm going to address a tweet I just got from my guy. We went from Fast Eddie to Eddie D. He said, "Nell, it's okay to criticize Jaden Daniels. One thing you shouldn't do is question his manhood." When I made the comment about staying in the pocket like a grown-ass man, it wasn't trying to question his manhood. It's calling out what I'm seeing. There has been a reluctancy for him to stand in the pocket and deliver the football when pressure is in his face. Do I need to run you the pressure numbers against the Steelers? Is that what we want to do here? I know I got numbers out the damn wazoo. If you look at the pressure numbers against Pittsburgh, pressured 13 total times, sacked 3 times. He was 3-for-10 for 44 yards when pressured. Guess what? He would have been 4-for-10 if he would have stood in there and took the shot and completed the football to Olamide Zaccheaus on a crucial third down. I'm not questioning his toughness at all. So don't try to take me there. That's not what I'm doing. I'm just pointing out a clear mechanical flaw that exists. There has been a reluctancy. Damn. There was a reluctancy for him to stand in there and throw the football since the injury. And it's very noticeable. That's a key part of playing the position. Being able to stand in there, knowing you're going to get your bell rung, and deliver the ball. Let me tell you the difference. If he was injured the way he is now, I guarantee you he doesn't make that big-time throw on Monday night to Terry McLaurin where he got lit up. He doesn't make that throw now because of the injury. If we're just looking for differences in the way this young man looks, it's very clear. 301-230-0980. Let's go to Paul in D.C. What's up, Paul?
Hey, Paul. What's going on, man?
What up, Paul?
Yeah, my concern right now, I say it's about a 6 or 7 for the offense. I think why the offense has sputtered the last couple of weeks is I think you played elite defenses and there's no elite talent on offense. And I mean, Terry's a good receiver.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
I was going to say, I agree with you about the thing of them playing two elite defenses the past 2 weeks. But are we not an elite offense?
Yeah. It's hard to say we're offense. It's hard to say we're elite offense. I think we're a good offense. I don't know if we're elite. Kansas City is elite. Buffalo's elite. Philly, when Jalen Hurts is playing at a high level, they're elite.
Well, Jalen Hurts is terrible, Paul. Jalen Hurts is terrible, Paul.
You said what?
Jalen Hurts is terrible, Paul. Did you watch Thursday night? He was god-awful.
No, I said when he's playing at a high level, I know he's up and down, but when he's playing at a high level, that offense is elite. I don't know if we're elite yet. I think we're very good, but I don't know if we're elite. But I think you got to get some more pieces around it. I mean, this team is – exceeded our expectations. Nobody thought we would come in this season and be 7-4, 11 games into the season.
I agree with you 100%.
I think we need to just scale back our expectations a little bit. I mean, I still think we can make the playoffs and all that stuff, but I think we just need to – I think the team the last 2 weeks has been exposed for what they really are, a team that doesn't have very much – a high-level talent on offense in this show when we played against teams with high-level talent on defense.
For sure. I can't argue with that, Paul. Appreciate the call. 301-230-0980 is the number. We'll take a timeout when we come back. More of your calls on the question that we have been asking here for the past several minutes. What is your level of concern for the Washington Commanders' offense out of 10? And then what's the biggest reason for their offensive struggles? I'll give you my biggest reasons for their offensive struggles next. Plus, we'll let you hear from Commanders running back Austin Ekeler, who joined Grant and Danny earlier today and had some interesting comments about a certain rib in the organization. That's next on the Team 980.